Hello and welcome to the British Society for Heart Failure podcast series. I'm Maggie Simpson. Today's podcast will focus on iron deficiency and heart failure. I'm delighted to be joined today by Dr. Sue Piper. Sue is a consultant cardiologist at King's College Hospital NHS Foundation Trust in London and is a member of the board of the British Society for Heart Failure and chairs the BSH subgroup on education. Sue is also the chair of the Pan-London Heart Failure Steering Group and has roles within the European Society of Cardiology Heart Failure Association committees. So Sue, thank you for joining us today. Is iron deficiency common in heart failure?
So yes, iron deficiency is a common comorbidity in heart failure. As the latest research we have so far suggests that around 50% of patients with chronic heart failure will have some form of iron deficiency, whether or not that is related to anemia as well as just iron deficiency on its own. So 50% of patients, in my mind, makes that a common comorbidity.
Absolutely. And does iron deficiency impact on the quality of life for patients with heart failure, and does it have an impact on their outcomes?
So again, there's fairly good evidence to show this. Now, most of the trials so far have looked at patients with an ejection fraction of less than 45%. So it's difficult to extrapolate that to the HFpEF patients, although in terms of what iron deficiency does to patients with HFpEF, it looks very similar in terms of the reduction in exercise tolerance and in symptomology. So we certainly know that regardless of the type of heart failure that you have, iron deficiency seems to affect you in the same way. Whether or not we have any evidence for changing that and how that might affect patients is a little bit different. But yes, across the spectrum of heart failure, there's good evidence that there's a reduction in your exercise tolerance. So things have tested, such as the 6-minute walk test, we know is reduced in patients who have iron deficiency and heart failure compared to those who do not. Things like your VO2 max, so on a cardiopulmonary exercise testing, when we look at your oxygen consumption, we know that's reduced if you have iron deficiency compared to if you don't. And then when you look at things like quality of life and do the quality of life scores, again, we know that those patients that have iron deficiency score higher, i.e. have worse quality of life on those scores compared with those that don't. And that is borne out quite interestingly in whether or not you have anemia or not. And in fact, it seems to be the iron deficiency and not the anemia that seems to be driving most of the symptoms. If you're anemic and not iron deficient, you don't seem to be quite so bad.
So it's common. It has an impact on patients' quality of life and therefore something we definitely need to be aware of. Is it easy to diagnose?
It is pretty easy to diagnose. Again, there's some debate going on at the moment about how we diagnose it. But traditionally, there's been two forms of iron deficiency that have been recognised in heart failure. One that we call functional. And what that essentially means is that the body's actually got iron stores. But due to the inflammation and the processes that inflammation in heart failure triggers, you're not actually able to access those stores. So your circulating iron is low. And that's usually looked at by looking at your ferritin levels. So your ferritin is the store, and they may well be within normal range or a bit higher than what would be for a normal iron non-heart failure patient. But your transferrin saturation, and that basically, transferrin is the protein that transports iron around your body, and the saturation, i.e. how much of that is being consumed with iron that is then for deliverable to the tissues, it should be above 20%. So in patients who have iron deficiency, that is less than 20%. So if it's functional, you've got good ferritin, but your transferrin saturation will be less than 20%. If you have an absolute iron deficiency, it basically means your stores are also depleted. So your ferritin will be lower than it should be for somebody with heart failure, and your transferrin saturation will also be low. So you've got these sort of two definitions, but effectively all it really needs is a blood test looking at ferritin and transferrin saturations. As I say, there's some debate as to whether or not you could actually just get rid of the ferritin and just say if you have low transferrin saturations, that is enough to diagnose your iron deficiency. But effectively, a simple blood test will tell you whether or not it is present in either form.
I was just about to say, it seems like a lot of our messages form around a simple blood test. when you think of it, BNP as well.
They do, so, yes.
When it comes to treating iron deficiency, is it safe to do so in heart failure patients?
Yeah, it appears to be so. So obviously there's two ways of repleting somebody's iron, and that is either oral or intravenous. Now, there've been limited studies that looked at oral iron in heart failure patients, i.e. they've been small and have been fairly short duration. But the evidence from those shows that there is no difference between a placebo and receiving oral iron in terms of the outcomes for improving your exercise tolerance or your quality of life scores. Again, it may be that there would be, if you carried them on longer, would you then replete the stores and therefore get the benefit of oral iron? Well, maybe, but those studies haven't been done. Most of the evidence is with intravenous iron, and that has shown a significant benefit in terms of exercise tolerance and quality of life. What we're lacking at the moment is the harder evidence regarding hospitalizations and mortality. There's some quite good signals that this may well be beneficial. So there are meta-analyses that have demonstrated heart failure hospitalizations seem to be reduced in patients that receive intravenous iron. And the recent AFFIRM-AHF trial, although it was effectively negative, it didn't quite reach its primary outcome, which was one of the hard targets was hospitalizations and mortality. There has been some sort of cohort analysis looking at the patients in the COVID era. So it was an unfortunate trial that got affected by the pandemic. But interestingly, what the trialists did, they looked at the patients and saw that actually all of them had received treatment up to the 24 weeks. And that was the one of the outcomes of the trial. They'd wanted patients to be treated up to 24 weeks. And so all the patients had actually reached that target point. And it was then the follow-up that was affected. So looking at how many patients had been admitted to hospital and looking at their mortality, it was that part of the study that was affected. And of course, we know during COVID that many patients, even if they came into hospital with decompensated heart failure, was quite likely to be associated with COVID, and therefore that might not have been coded as such. And of course, from a mortality point of view, many patients either didn't make it into hospital, or if they did, again, it was usually a COVID-related issue. And therefore, the outcomes there may have been affected in terms of the trial. So they tried to do some fancy statistics to see what would have happened if COVID hadn't been around, or what the outcomes might have been. And again, the signal here is that there is probably some improvement, again, probably driven by heart failure hospitalizations rather than mortality. But the signal is there that I don't think we should give up on those harder outcomes yet for intravenous iron. And there are several trials ongoing at the moment, most notably Ironman, which we hope will report next year, which again has got mortality as one of its hard points. And hopefully that has been less affected by COVID. I mean, it will have been affected, unfortunately, but hopefully we'll be able to have some good results from that will either tell us that we need to stop looking for this, or will tell us actually this is probably a true thing.
So we have some data to show that quality of life has improved with IV iron replacement. And yes, we want to make sure that what we do is safe. And we also look for benefits in terms of reduction in hospitalisation and mortality. Even if we don't get that, but we know that it's safe to deliver this treatment, are the benefits to that person of an improved quality of life still worth looking for iron deficiency and replacing?
Absolutely. I think that anyone that works in the heart failure field or works with patients with heart failure knows that actually quality of life is perhaps the biggest thing from a patient point of view. Most patients would be much happier having a good quality of life, even if that is shortened perhaps by a few years, as long as the quality that they have is good, is a absolutely a good outcome for our patients. So we shouldn't dismiss the use of intravenous iron in patients, even if we don't get the harder outcomes. I think all it really means is that when we're talking about things like guidelines and international guidance, it'll be further down the list of what you should be considering these patients have to have. But we all know that there are many things on guidelines which have benefit for patients that might not appear in your class A type, level of evidence. So yeah, I don't think it's something that we should give up on. We've got enough evidence at the moment to show that it's beneficial for patients.
So practically then, How do you deliver IV iron in your practice, and does it require kind of cross collaboration with other areas of secondary or primary care?
Yeah, so this partly depends, really. There's variation across the country about how it's delivered. And I don't think that's a big problem as long as patients are getting access to the therapy. So there are several ways of doing it. And I, you know, myself and colleagues have often spoken about this. And it may be that you have a service of your own that patients get referred to. It may be you collaborate with other services such as gastroenterology, hematology, renal. But whatever it is that you have, all you need to make sure that you've got is a referral pathway in to a service, and a service that can both deliver and then do the initial follow-up for patients. Of course, we've got to make sure that patients have actually been made iron replete. There's no point giving them a single dose and then letting them go off and actually you didn't treat the condition appropriately. So there has to be an ability to do that. So the way we do it here at King's is with our renal physicians. They have an anemia service that we have been able to sort of piggyback onto. And effectively, it's a very simple computer referral where we put the patient's details in, what we would like them to have. They then get an appointment in the clinic. The clinic delivers the intravenous iron, and that's done in a setting. It's an ambulatory setting, but it's within the hospital site. So patients come in at their designated time. They have around 45-minute appointment, and that allows the intravenous iron to be given, but also some period of monitoring, because, of course, there is a small but recognisable side effect of anaphylaxis with intravenous iron. So you do have to make sure that you've got trained staff and the appropriate equipment around to deal with that should you experience it. I mean, it is rare. It's less than 1 in 1,000 patients. So it really is not a big deal, but it has to be something that you're prepared for. The biggest issues that I've sort of seen are a bit of nausea, some reaction sites around the cannulas, etc. And they're the most commonly reported side effects. But overall, it's a fairly simple thing to do, safe, and actually is pretty cost effective. If you look at the cost effective analyses that have been done, it shows that actually you get a lot of benefit from giving what's a fairly cheap treatment.
Great. Now, thinking about where heart failure patients are, so there will be some patients who are under the care of heart failure specialists, and then there will be many who have perhaps gone through that pathway and are sitting in the follow-up in primary care. Do you think it's worthwhile having or looking for iron deficiency as part of that routine 6-monthly follow-up with other blood tests that patients have to get?
Yes, I do. I think as a standard set of the blood tests, we should be including, and you can argue whether it's ferritin and ferritin and TSATs, but I think that should be part of the standard set for 6-monthly review for heart failure patients. Yes.
Great. Thank you, Sue, for your time today and for that excellent overview of iron deficiency in heart failure. If you have been listening and would like any further information on heart failure, the signs and symptoms of heart failure, or the activities of the British Society for Heart Failure, please follow us on Twitter or check out our website at www.bsh.org.uk. Thanks for listening.